Welcome to PCMC. I'm Mike Bongiorno. I'm joined today once again by my good friend Janine Gagliardi. This is the second part of our two-part coverage of Love, Death, and Robots Volume 3. Also today, we are going to crown our favorites of Love, Death, and Robots Volumes 1 through 3. The funniest episode, the sexiest episode, our favorite monster, and so on. So stay tuned for that. Thank you for listening to PCMC, and thank you for checking us out if you're new to the show.
All right, on to Mason's Rats. This is
love by, Mason's Rats.
I know, me too. I like this way more than I thought I was going to. This one is about 10 minutes long. It's by Axis Studio. They did The Tall Grass.
Yes.
But more importantly, they did Arcane, which is the League of Legends show.
Okay.
That I've never played League of Legends, but the show is incredible in terms of animation.
Wow. So, okay. So you watched it?
Yeah.
And you enjoyed it?
Yeah.
And not knowing anything about this game?
No.
Wow. Okay.
And just the animation is absolutely incredible, but it's a really good story. Its icons are a dead cat. A nut, as in like a nut and bolt, and a beer stein. It's directed by Carlo Stevens, script by Joe Abercrombie, based on a story by Neil Asher. And it stars Craig Ferguson.
I know.
As Mason.
He's great.
So we're in like what? Future Scotland?
Future Scotland. Future Scotland on a farm.
Yeah.
He goes into his barn. Mason goes into his barn.
Yeah.
Sees a rat, a big old nasty bastard, as he calls him, shoots the rat with a shotgun and then realizes that he's got a much bigger problem on his hands.
Right, he picks up the rat and he sees it's got a belt on with weapons.
Yeah, the belt.
They've created weapons.
Amazing. So this brought me back to what you were talking about a few episodes ago, where you were saying you were reading this book about how like rats have evolved alongside humans.
Yeah.
Like rats don't exist really in the wild.
Gory details.
That they always evolve alongside humans. Right. So this is, I was like, oh yeah, there it goes.
Yeah.
It's very charming aesthetic, despite all the gore. Like, everything looks cobbled together. Like, it's a lot of metal. Like, the barn is all metal, too. At some point, he's, like, repairing something.
Yeah.
Like, a machine that kind of looks like it might be, like, almost like a dog, kind of, it looks like. I don't know what that machine was. But it's, like, there's shotguns, and there's, like, he's wearing a lot of, like, tweed and, like, a little old Scottish hat. And, he's, you know, he's drinking from a little tin cup. He's smoking. But there's also like futuristic stuff happening.
Right. He's got these two barns right next to each other across from his home. And his home looks like a little shack, but like the barns look very futuristic.
Yeah, and big.
And clearly there's future technology, but like not a lot of it. Yeah, it's got a cute, maybe cute's not the right word. I think it does have a cute aesthetic to it,
but it's like, it's a really, I like
he's
such that.
He's a stereotype of a Scottish man.
Yes. Yes. Just very sort of salt of the earth.
Yeah, he's got these big hands.
Great mutton chops and big mustache. Yeah. I love.
Cigarette always in his mouth.
Always. He's always drinking a little something.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. He's got a mug and he's like.
Yeah, he's always Irishing up that coffee.
Yeah.
So he makes a call. He's like, it's Mason. I got a bit of a pest problem. And like the sleazy salesman comes in, who's played by Dan Stevens, who's, I don't watch Downton Abbey, but he's in Downton Abbey. He was the Beast in Beauty and the Beast, the Emma Watson one. He's in stuff.
Huh. I've seen both Downton Abbey movies, but
I don't think he would have been in the movies. He was on the series, and I think he died tragically.
Tragically. He brings up evolution. He's like, listen, this like, we see this problem happening. Like, it's evolution.
I love that. He was like, minimal tool use is bound to happen. It's like, oh no. It's so funny. He's like, not to worry, Mr. Mason. We have stuff for you.
He introduces him to the TT6, which is a fixed position pulse laser.
Yeah.
And Mason's like, how much will it be?
He's like, Christ.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. The whole time. You just see the barn lighting up.
Yeah. It's hilarious when the pest control guy, like, he has a rat tail, by the way, which is hilarious. He shows him the pamphlet for it, and it's like a bunch of rats like running away from it, and like it, like Bird Bubbles like, oh no, it's the TT6. Immediately it kills his cat.
Yes. And he's like, I'm gonna need a discount for that.
Yeah, her name was Susan.
Oh my god.
Which I feel like is improv, because on Craig Ferguson's show, he would call people Susan a lot.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's like his go-to comedy. His
comedy name?
Yeah.
Susan.
Yeah, it just... what was the first one? What happens? Yeah, kills the cat, and then... eventually...
He just it's like a montage, and you just see him like going about his day on the farm, and like the barn will light up all red, right. And he's like,
right.
And then he has a camera system in his house, and then you just see like all the cameras are getting blacked out one by one, and then you just see a little like military rat in the camera, and then he like blacks out the last camera, and he's like, you cheeky fuckers,
right. So he calls the pest guy back. He bought, I think, 5 of them, and they can only find 4. Because we find out later they turn one of them into a tank.
Yes.
The rats turn into a tank.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, well,
He's like, sorry, we're going to have to charge you for that one.
Yeah. He's like, okay, what you need is the TT-15.
He's like, you know, I was worried this might be a problem, Mason. We've been seeing this a lot. So we got this. And it's basically like a scorpion terminator.
Again, an arachnid.
Yes. So it's got one big red eye.
Yeah.
Horrible claws and like a crazy... So one...
Lasers.
Scorpion arm is like a claw. And then the other scorpion arm is like a crazy gun.
Yeah. But it acts like a dog because it immediately goes and brings him a rat and gives it to Mason.
Yeah, and he goes, like, good boy. Thank you. Good boy.
He brings a rat head.
Yes. You don't get the feeling... And I have to clarify. So it's like this thing is absolutely demolishing rats left and right. And like the body count is staggering now once he has this creature, this robot, but you never get the feeling that Mason's like a bad dude. It's just like he's got a rat infestation that's horrible and he's trying to take care of it,
and as things get crazier he gets more concerned.
Yeah, he gets more concerned at like what the fuck is actually happening, because now this thing is creating a pile of heads in his yard.
Yeah, he comes out and he sees two rats
like running away. Like, one of them falls, and then he's like, like save yourselves, kind of. And the other rats are looking on, and then the scorpion comes out, like grabs it, throws it in the air, and then like just fires on it so insanely over the top, like shoots it. Like,
it's hilarious because the timing is like it goes longer than it should,
so long.
And you just see like the faces of the other two rats watching,
like horrified, and also Mason is horrified. Yeah. And then it neatly picks up the head and like brings it over to the pile where he's been doing it. Yeah. And he's like, Christ,
Christ on a bike. Oh, and then one little rat like crawls away from the pile and it murders it.
Yeah, it gets it. Yeah. So you're starting to feel sympathy for these rats.
Yeah.
Because now the rats have more humanity.
Yeah. He opens the barn and it's like an all-out war between the rats and the thing.
Rats are like, they have... Oh, right. So when he first kills the rat, another rat shoots an arrow at him. Yeah. And he like pulls out the little arrow and is like, oh shit, we got a problem.
Right.
That's why he doesn't just...
They're organized. Yeah.
They have weapons. They are basically living through Terminator.
Yeah.
These rats.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, in their world, they're experiencing the events of the movie Terminator. Started with Skynet, and now the Terminators are out to get them. So they're waging war. They have weapons.
Yeah.
They're, like, attacking this thing. Like, you see one, like, jump from the rafters, try to, like, stab it. The John Connor of the rats is, like, riding a tank into it into the robot. And they damage it.
Yeah.
But now, so Mason is watching this all unfold, and he's like, oh, my God, it's, like, World War III or IV, he says, right? World War IV.
Assuming there was a III.
There was a III already, I guess. And you think the robot is out, but it it takes its claw and it like starts dragging itself. Yeah. And you can see like the rats are tending to their wounded.
Yeah. There's like a little hospital and like there's a little rat on a gurney. And then, but then there's one rat that looks like Mason. He's old and he has a little cap.
Well, he's their leader.
Yeah.
And yes, he does look like Mason. He's got his cap, his little hat, and he like turns and he's got like a big knife and he's just gonna defend them till the death. And then Mason shoots the robot and gets him.
Yeah.
And he goes, "There you go, you nasty bastard."
The Mason rat like nods at him, and then the little
one in the gives rat him on the gurney
gives him a thumbs up. It's hilarious.
Then we see what the rats have been doing, because they got into the grain, it looked like, in the beginning, and now they're using the grain to make some kind of hooch. I don't know what. Right.
And they serve it in like shotgun shells.
Oh, it's shotgun shells. Yeah, so he gives it to
Mason. Mason takes it. He's like, oh, that's great.
Fuck, that's good. So good. Yeah. And so they're sharing a little drink at the end.
He respects them.
He goes, "I respect your bravery, sir."
Will you?
Sir.
I know.
The rat.
I kept thinking.
All the lights on my street just went off. What?
Oh, boy.
Oh, my God.
I was, oh, no, the rats.
Oh, the rats.
I kept thinking about Braveheart and like the Scottish,
like freedom.
Yeah, like at some point the fight in them makes Mason respect them.
Yes, yes, it's he respects that they are not giving up, that they are gonna fight to their last man.
Yeah,
that they
he
acknowledges the humanity in them.
Yeah,
it's so fun. It's so good. I love it. Yeah, I love
it's really a fun one. It's absolutely a fun one. And it's got a lot of funny, just like little like physical things, like the way the rats move and
their expressions. They're very expressive.
Yeah. Like at one point, Mason gets up in the morning and he's looking out his window at the barn, and you just see like his hairy ass crack from like he's got one of those like weird like pajamas on with the
ass flaps.
Yeah,
on
with
it.
The ass flap. And of course he's drinking because he's always drinking. It's fun. It's super fun.
It's a fun one.
I mean,
like what an
it's
idea.
It's super violent. It's very bloody.
It's very like over the top.
It reminds me of Rick and Morty. A lot of
like a Pickle Rick episode.
Yeah, a lot of rat death. Yeah. A lot of rat death.
Yeah.
But you know, in the end,
I loved it.
They make peace.
They do. Yeah. What an original idea.
It really is. I mean, who would have thunk? So what's next? In Vaulted Halls Entombed.
Yeah.
I kind of...
This one has, like, quite the cast.
Yeah. And again, a lot of arachnids.
A lot of it. Yeah.
This one I can kind of... This is the one I could do without.
Okay.
It's not bad. It's just like... I don't know. Again, it's the military. Mm-hmm. Again, we go into like a cave.
Yeah. It feels like it's been done by this show multiple times.
Yeah.
So... This is a Cthulhu story.
Yeah, it is.
Which is wild. Is. You don't expect it to be a Cthulhu story.
Oh, sorry.
Oh.
Oh, it is midnight.
Was that an alarm for midnight?
No. I set an alarm. I meditate every day.
Oh.
And I set an alarm to meditate.
I didn't realize you were better than us.
I mean, it's kind of implied by the fact that I meditate, but...
You're achieving a higher state of consciousness.
You know, side note. Jen has a niece, like cute kid, she's like 10, and you know, I'm a vegetarian, and there's no vegetarians in her family, but this girl was like, "I'm a vegetarian," just out of nowhere.
Okay.
So Jen's grandmother was like, "Could you talk to her?" I was like, "What do you want me to say to her? Like, you want me to give her pointers? You want me to talk her out of it?"
Yeah, it's like just a phase.
And she was like, "No, you can give her pointers, whatever." So they came on Christmas, and I was like, "Hey, you're a vegetarian." She was like, "Yeah." And I was like, "Let me tell you something, kid. Something you probably already know. We're better than everybody else." And she loved it. She was my favorite after that.
Aww.
Anyway, so what the hell are we doing? Oh, involved. Yeah. This, okay. All right. So it's directed by Jeremy Chen. It's written again by Philip Gillette, based on a story by Alan Baxter.
Okay.
It stars Joe Manganiello, Jai Courtney,
and Christian Serratos.
She's from something, right?
She's on The Walking Dead.
Oh, okay.
Or she was. I'm not sure if she's still around. I stopped watching, but she was on some seasons that I watched. And she also was on... She played Selena in the Selena series that was last year or something. Yeah.
This was made by Sony Pictures Imageworks, which I don't think they did a great job. I mean, compared to some of the other 3D stuff, like this looked like PlayStation...
Their faces looked weird. It's supposed to be like I think it was supposed to be a one-to-one of the actor...
Yeah, it's clearly trying to look like
them. It just didn't get it right.
Yeah.
Like his eyes looked really weird.
Yeah. Like, compare that to Lucky 13, where, like, it really looks
it looks like Samira Wiley, like, completely. It does feel like video game graphics. So they're on a mission to find this hostage.
Yeah.
They go into this cave system. They immediately run into a skeleton and they realize it's the hostage.
You can kind of describe this in 2 seconds.
And they're like, oh shit, what happened? And then the insurgents are also hostages, skeletons.
Yeah.
So then all of a sudden there's like this gross little white spider. It has it's like a face hugger from Alien, basically. It has a little face.
It's like a spider, but then like it has like a humanish face.
Yeah. And then in the center of it, it has a screaming face. And then there's thousands of them.
All right. And they just eat you alive.
The physics of them eating you, it's like you melt, kind of. Like, once they're on you, it's almost like the piranhas. Like, they just destroy your body. Like, they're on one of the soldiers just a moment before, and the Joe Manganiello's character grabs his arm and is like, come on, and his whole arm just comes right off.
Right, it's
goo. So
he's Sarge.
Sarge. Another Sarge.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they make it through the cave. They lose some people along the way.
Yeah.
And then it's just the three of them, Jai Courtney and the
other
two.
There's one cool moment where, like, a guy who's, like, mostly eaten, like, shambles out.
Oh, and then, like, yeah. And his, like, guts fall guts out. And then he, like, falls right off. So what they get to is this, like, crazy open area in the cave.
Right.
Where I wasn't really sure what I was looking at.
It looked like stairs, but for a giant.
Yes, huge, gigantic stairs.
Yeah.
And then there's figures. I actually thought there were people when I first saw them, like people who were there, but they weren't.
They're like
just
statues.
Of people with their arms out.
Yeah.
Almost like wizards or something. Yeah. Like, it looks like they're like holding something in, like with a spell. Or whatever they're doing.
Yeah. And there are these big giant chains.
Yes, big huge chains. But there's something central. They're like, and it's not Cthulhu.
There's like a temple in the middle.
Yeah, something's in the middle. And then
it looks like a level from Doom.
Okay.
And like it is. There's like a level from Doom that's like literally exactly like this.
And you're in there and the little white spiders don't come out anymore.
Right.
So they're like, oh, they must only live in there. But you hear like this weird like guttural chanting kind of happening in there. And then as they're trying to like make heads or tails, like what the hell is going on?
Yeah.
Looks like metallic.
Yeah, they're bigger
spiders come out, but they also can roll.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they're coming down the stairs, and they're
like, there's the one guy who's praying, and she's like, God is dead, embrace the suck.
Embrace the suck. Bill, when we were watching that, Bill's like, oh, I hate that. I'm like, what is that? He goes, it's a police academy thing, too. It's like they say embrace the suck. He's like, we have a lot of like former military. He's like, I think it's a Marine thing.
Yeah, I've always heard of it as a military thing.
Yeah, I think it's just like accept that the circumstances are shitty and just get on with it. Like, I think it's the military, like keep calm and carry on. Like, just it sucks, whatever. It is what it is.
Embrace the suck.
Yeah.
Go into the, what does Jack Donaghy say?
Enter the crevasse.
Yeah. So the big spider things just fuck the shit out of this guy.
Yeah, they kill him.
And then
they
kill him real good. Sarge, and then what's her name? The female
Harper.
Soldier. Harper, yeah.
Harper. So now she identifies light coming through a crack, and she's like, "That's our exit. You can see it. We can get out that way." But that's in one direction, and the other direction is, I don't know what, the sound that Sarge can hear, and it's drawing him near to where the chains are going. And so she follows him. She's like, where are you going? What the fuck are you doing? Like, come back.
Yeah.
And he seems completely entranced by this. And they follow it. And there at the end of the chains is this massive creature figure with a lot of eyes. And you can't really tell what it is. The eyes are glowing like lava, and it's emitting a sound.
Its eyes aren't open yet. Once its eyes open, they're gold. Gold again. And eyes again. And that's when it like possesses.
Yes. It possesses both of them. Like she, well, it possesses him really, but she starts seeing visions and she's screaming. They're holding their heads.
Because the sound is like going through them.
Yeah. And what she sees is like destruction. Like she sees this thing. And she sees like burning, and she sees the eyes, and she sees it like over like a town or a city, and things are on fire.
A future vision, a vision of what will happen if it gets out.
And then in that vision, you see more of the monster, and then you see it has like bat wings, and it's a Cthulhu.
Yeah. Okay. because I thought this too, mm-hmm. but I'm wondering why. Like, why did we both go, oh, that's Cthulhu, rather than say that's Godzilla or that's Cloverfield or whatever?
So, because Cthulhu has a shape. It's also the same shape as actually, well, I think Cthulhu appears twice in this volume, because the little creature in Swarm is also a little Cthulhu. It has the same eyes.
Oh, yeah.
It's got, like, little tentacle mouth.
Yeah.
And it's got bat wings.
Okay.
And that's a Cthulhu.
Okay, okay.
It's just a Cthulhu, like a Dracula.
Yeah.
So, and that's what this thing looks like. It has the bat wings. But it's massive. It's humongous.
Yeah. And it's saying, like, release me.
Yeah, yeah. And what's he going to do? Set a grenade off and let loose the chains?
Yeah.
I don't know. That would
really and she fights him.
But she fights him. And he takes out a knife and is going to kill her. So she shoots him.
And then let's see. How do we interpret the ending?
I don't know.
Because it ends with, we see she's outside out. And she's sort of slowly
staggering.
And she's got a knife in her hand. And then you see her eyes are out.
Her eyes are out. And her ears are off, too.
Oh, okay.
Her ears are gone also.
She has carved her own...
She cut out her own eyes and cut off her own
ears. So she's ears. Not...
And I wasn't sure if she was also tongueless.
Hmm.
But she's making a weird noise. I first thought she was saying, it comes. But she's not. She's making like clicking noises. I think it's like chanting kind of. Or something. She's like,
I'm trying to remember what the subtitle said.
It says alien language. Okay. She speaks an alien language. So she's just saying like creepy nonsense. And it's like... Well, like it's like also got a clicking component to it. So she's gone insane. She's been driven completely mad by this thing, I think.
Yeah.
That's my interpretation, is that she's gone crazy completely. Like it drove her mad and she...
And again, we have an eye being taken out.
Yeah, eyes are taken out. Her ears are taken off. And she's mumbling.
It also has DNA in common with Jabaro, with the sound of a siren.
The sounds, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting. And a character in that is deaf.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess maybe she's like possessed by it, whatever, and that's why she's speaking it.
Mm.
And she doesn't want to, maybe she did cut out her tongue so she cannot make anyone else get to it.
Yeah.
She kept it from
It from getting out, yeah. But I don't think things bode well for her. I mean, she's just wandering around with no eyes, no ears. And
so
I don't think she's going to survive, basically. Yeah. Like she's
okay. No, she's all right. We teased this before, but I think now's a great time to talk about it. Mm-hmm. What is the... Why are there so many stories about the military?
Okay.
Often it's American military mostly, but then there's like the Russian one from season one.
Yeah.
And
Secret War.
Yeah. But often it's like military and mm-hmm. science and mm-hmm. logic, right? Mm-hmm. But somehow they come across something mythical that's mm-hmm. beyond their realm.
I have a couple of theories.
Okay.
So my first theory is just like, why military? From a practical perspective, if you're like putting characters into a story and you're even like mercenaries are like militaristic, right? So like Sucker of Souls, like mercenaries.
The one with the werewolf guys.
That's military, yeah. Yeah. So from like a practical, I would say writing aspect. Uh-huh. You're putting people in a situation where they're going to come up against these like crazy supernatural forces. Like you have to give them a little bit of even footing. Like you basically have to give them like a gun or arms, right? And you have to have them be able to use it and hold their own. And so that's an easy way to put like, oh, just put a military person in there. They'll be able to fight. But I think because I was thinking about this in terms of like Twilight Zone too, like the military features pretty heavily in the Twilight Zone as well.
Mm-hmm.
So you have this history of science fiction featuring the military. And I think it has a lot to do with like government secrets, secret experiments, secret projects, like Roswell in our, you know, reality has to do with like a military,
right?
Yeah.
It's something we did.
Right. Military bases. And then the other thing is like you have the military sort of going off the grid, going into uninhabited areas, going into places like your regular civilian is not going to go. And then they're finding things there.
Mm.
In real life, there are all these like Reddit subreddits about like crazy stories from military folk. Like, for instance, the U.S. Air Force declassified like a couple months ago, like UFOs. And we're basically like, oh, yeah, we see them constantly. We don't know what they are.
Right.
It's not aliens necessarily, but like there's UFOs all the time reported by the Air Force. So it's just like this idea that like you're out in the world in spaces where normal people aren't usually. So you're just experiencing stuff that like normies don't experience.
But there's, yeah.
So that's my theory of why there's so much military stuff.
But I think bouncing off of that.
Also, it's like exploration. Like, yes. all NASA folk were mostly like former Air Force.
Right.
So like if you're going into space exploration, there's like a military component in that.
But I think it also comes down to, again, the theme of we think we know everything, but we don't.
Mm.
Because there are all of these natural phenomenon that we're unaware that Cthulhu lives in a mountain
right.
in wherever the fuck. Right. We're unaware that there are a werewolf army that's being fought during World War One by Russians.
Mm.
You know, it's like the coming together of, you know, quote unquote, logic,
right,
and a scientific way of thinking and so forth, and knowledge,
like,
and
hard minds
and might
up against these things they can't possibly wrap their heads around,
and things that are way older than you and just would have been just on their own, but you went and fucked with them. You went into it.
You went to their space.
Yeah, and now you have to deal with it.
Well, Hibaru also is like that, where they're soldiers. I mean, they're just old. They're ancient soldiers, right? Like, they're wearing armor.
Yeah.
But it's that as well. It's like, we are going to explore a new territory. Who are we going to send in first? We're going to send in our military, whomever they may be.
Yeah.
To explore and do reconnaissance and then report back to us. And so it's always the scientists and the military, and usually working hand in hand.
Right. Well, see, one that I'm thinking about is, and this is not military, but I think it sort of fits in with this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
The tall grass.
Yeah.
Because not military, but it is the railroads, which is one of the first sort of versions of modernity. It's a way of extending might, extending economic power. And because there was nothing there, there were all these weird things that were happening.
Yeah.
But now, because there's a fucking train that goes through there, you see that shit.
Mm-hmm.
So it's again a theme like, well, you know what? I'll get to this when we talk about the last thing we're going to do.
Okay.
We come to the very last one, which is the one that's being cosplayed a lot.
I could see that being beautiful cosplay.
And
the
one that's being a lot of fan art. It's really inspiring.
It's gorgeous. It's funny. So it's the same people who did Witness.
I said Jabaro, but you are Hibaru. Pronouncing it with an H.
Yeah. So in Spanish, J's are H's.
What does it mean?
Okay. So what I'm going to say, my knowledge. So, okay. Last year, I had a student who got into the University of Texas at Austin for graduate school based on his research. And his research was about Hibaru.
Oh, okay.
So when I saw the title and I was like, oh, and it's like a Spanish name for the director, I was like, this has to be about this stuff.
Yeah.
But it's not necessarily.
Okay.
Right? So in reading an interview with the director, he basically says, like, we picked the name Hibaru, and he's like, I refer to the knight as Hibaru, but it doesn't have to be the knight.
Okay. But what does Hibaru mean?
So he said, we picked the name Hibaru because it was Spanish sounding. The name itself doesn't mean anything in particular.
It's just a name?
It's a name. Well, yes. It's not a given name, though. It's not like somebody you would meet is named Hibaru.
But, like, so, outside of this, like, what does it mean? Like, if I were to study it.
Okay. So in my understanding of it, based on the students' research that we had, the Hibaru is a figure in Puerto Rican culture that is like, it's not a folklore figure. Uh-huh. It's really more of like a folk hero. It's sort of akin to like what the word pioneer would be for us.
I see.
And they have statues for the Hibaru. And a Hibaru is like a person of the land. It's a self-sustaining farmer.
Okay.
A native self-sustaining farmer. And that's what it means in terms of in Puerto Rican culture. And his research was basically like the art that represents the Hibaru is usually like a lighter skinned Puerto Rican native who's like a man and is a farmer. But he's like, when I was in Puerto Rico doing research, and he himself is Puerto Rican, but descended from like native Puerto Rican. He's like, I found earlier artwork that was named Hibaru, and it was a dark-skinned woman. And like the Hibaru is supposed to be like representative of the island. This is the representative of the people. Like, this is who we are as a cultural people. And he's like, I'm saying, like, what was this sort of like whitewashing or light-skinned washing, like this colorism that was occurring in our own Puerto Rican culture of like lionizing these like lighter-skinned characters as the Hibaro, when really like this earliest art that I found was this darker skinned woman. So that was really interesting. And this was like really novel research, and he got into like whatever program he wanted to basically based on this research. But anyway, what the director says is like, yeah, he says in Puerto Rico, it's like a farmer. He goes in another country. He's like, we think it's like has to do with drug dealers. And this, so it's like, he's like, Hibaro is just like a word, like us in Spanish speaking countries. So I was like, huh, okay, that's interesting. He didn't really mean it to mean anything, according to him. He also said like the look of the knights, because the knights,
they look like conquistadors.
They look like conquistadors. They're in like silver armor. They have the conquistador helmets, the like, distinct like Christopher Columbus helmet, right?
Yeah.
But they also have like tattoos all over them.
Yes.
On their necks, on their faces. And they have with piercings.
Them. Or monks or something with them.
Yeah, some someone religious... said like, oh, maybe they're missionaries.
Okay.
But they're sort of unusual looking. Like, I don't know what that garb is that the priests are wearing.
Right.
They're like very high purple. It's weird. There's one guy in gold. One of these knights is in gold. Well, I'm saying knights, but they're conquistadors, whatever, whoever they are. It
seems like the director refers to them as knights.
Knights, yeah.
So it's all very, it seems to be playing, it's basically a silent short too.
Yes.
So it's very, very abstract. It's very, very visually assaulting and arresting and beautiful. Yes. And
I want to give broad strokes of just what happens.
Sure.
Like you see the knights, they're riding through the forest. They're on, it's like beautiful, lush landscape. And they come to a body of water. And like right before they get there, they like kneel in front of all these old men who look like priests, and I don't know what they're doing in the middle of the jungle. If they were with them, they're just riding with them, and then they're gonna give them a blessing. Yeah. I don't know what. But this gilded woman comes out of the water. We're to understand she's a siren. She screams at them, and the scream drives them crazy, and they all like start killing each other.
Because I typically think of a siren like what we do in The Shadows, like somebody who has a sweet voice that draws you in.
Horrifying, yeah.
Her voice is horrible, but literally draws them in,
physically pulls them in. Like, yeah, they can't fight against her.
Yeah, it's wild. It's wild, and I couldn't tell if she feels pain when she does it. Because
she looks like she's holding her throat. Yeah. It's interesting. I want to get into it a little bit more. But just
there's plenty to get into. This is what happens. Okay.
He's deaf, this main character, this main knight. He's deaf, so he doesn't hear it, so it doesn't have an effect on him.
Right.
So he's trying to, like, he gets away, but she follows him.
Right.
And she becomes fascinated with him because he's deaf.
Right.
But she's still trying to kill him, I think.
That was one of my questions is, does she like him? Is she intrigued by him?
I think she's intrigued by him, but she's also still trying to kill him,
trying to kill him?
Or she's like, come meet me at the top of this waterfall.
See, but I don't know if she's trying to kill him as much as she's cursed in the sense that you can't touch her without hurting yourself.
Right, you cut
yourself. I don't think she's trying to hurt him.
I don't know, because she like lures him to the top. I think they're both the villain. I think they're both bad. All right, so the director is like, this is not anything really more than just a toxic relationship story. Like, they're very, very bad for each other. And I'm like, there's so much more happening here.
Yeah.
Bill said something yesterday that blew my mind.
Yeah.
We'll get to it in a moment.
Okay.
But it just, I was like, whoa. Also, the first time we watched it, he was like, I can honestly say, he's like, I've never seen anything like this.
Yes.
Ever.
Which is an incredible thing to say.
It really is. Because nothing's new under the sun. Yeah. But this feels new.
Yeah.
Incredible.
And even for this series, it feels like this is a step forward for them.
Yes.
This is different.
Yeah.
This is the most different thing they've done.
It's stunning. It's stunning. Like, I was incredibly creeped out for a lot of it, but couldn't take my eyes off the screen. Yeah. Really gorgeous. And it also has like this handheld camera effect, which makes it feel like you're watching something real. Mm. There's like a night vision part that's so freaky and creepy.
Finish the brief synopses.
Okay.
And then we'll get into the aesthetic.
So she kind of like stalks him, and then he wakes up and she's right next to him, and then she runs away like, come chase me. And he does, and he follows her. And then she brings him to the top of this like raging waterfall, which it just seems like very precarious. Like, he could topple over the side in a moment. And they kiss each other, but her lip, it looks like sequins. Yeah. And, but it seems like razor sharp. So it's just like blood is pouring out of his mouth while they're kissing. And she doesn't seem like she's trying to hurt him.
Yeah.
At that point, but he's getting hurt.
She also is like giving him a little lap dance. She's like going all
around. She's
like
dancing
him.
All around. She's like licking his sword and stuff. And also, she always moves like they talk about what dancer's choreographer they used.
Yeah.
But she moves like very serpentine, like
it's all spirals. It's all spinning. Yeah.
I laughed so hard when they wake up and she runs away from him and just like one crazy spin into the water. Yeah. I was like, she cannot help herself.
No.
It's like Liza trying to turn off a lamp.
Yeah.
Like, she's just dancing all over the place.
Yeah.
So he knocks her out and then really like maniacally starts pulling off her gold.
And this is very disturbing.
This is like a rape scene.
Yeah.
It's a real rape, right? Like rape and pillage. And he's pillaging her at the same time as he's like raping her body, essentially. Right. Like so she's completely gilded top to toes and he starts pulling off the gold. And if it's not an outfit, it is part of her body.
Yes.
And so as he's pulling off all the gold and her face, which is like a big gold mask, I guess.
Right.
He pulls that off last. Like blood is pouring out of her and she just looks like a corpse at that point. Like he's completely taken everything off of her.
Mm-hmm.
And he kicks her body into the waterfall and it kind of floats back up. And then her body goes back to where it came from, this lake that kind of looks like a heart.
Mm.
And so this is why I reject that it's not a post-colonial story.
Yeah.
Because Bill's like, why does he keep going by the river? And I'm like, well, he's following the river out of there. It obviously runs through the whole thing and it's all connected because she can travel through it.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like she could run around all over the place. Like it seems like she's also tied to this river.
Right.
But like he needs water and he's like, oh, and this is what blew my mind. He's like, oh, so it's like the circulatory system of wherever they are. And I'm like, yes. Oh my God. Yes, it is the circulatory system because she's coming from the heart. Like it's all like located from the heart. And then when she's dead, it turns all the water into blood.
Turns to blood, right.
And it like pours through this river. And so this is why I rejected it's not post-colonial because like whoever wrote that article, I think their name is like Andrea Tall.
Yeah.
Was saying like it's not post-colonial because then you know it's not about nature, it's about treasure. I'm like, well yeah, but the treasure is in nature.
Yeah.
And this whole like she is representative of the heart of this land and it's connected through this river as a circulatory system.
I found her arguments a little bit
it is a gentleman, I believe, lacking. Yes,
I found his arguments a little bit lacking.
Yeah, agreed. Also because he's like, it's about chivalric tradition like Cervantes, and I'm like, yeah, well definitely I see that.
Yeah,
like there's knights, but he never talks about the Lady in the Lake.
Right.
Which is an Arthurian thing. Right. And like she really, she like emerges from a lake and meets
the
knights.
That's the first thing I thought about.
So,
or the great M. Night Shyamalan film, Lady in the Water.
Love that.
I think they got a lot of inspiration from that.
I think the creators of Hibaro were thinking about that a lot.
Yeah.
You know what though? I wouldn't say no to Bryce Dallas Howard showing up in Love, Death, and Robots. I love Bryce.
Hey.
Best Star Wars director. So anyway. So he drinks from the river. Once it has her blood in it, he can hear.
Yeah.
And this drives him nuts. So he's like screaming. He gets very freaked out. The sounds are freaking him out.
Yes.
He's like smashing his ears on the ground at one point.
Yeah.
He's like swinging his sword all around, laughing. He looks deranged also.
Yeah.
From like minute one, he looks deranged.
Yeah.
Like we're to understand that he's deaf, not because the short is silent. Although it is silent at times because you can hear
nature.
Well, it's
dialogue-less.
It's dialogue-less. But like another knight signs to him, like makes a sign to him.
When we seem to cut to his point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And in cinema, it could be your point of view without being first person. Like if you cut to a close up with somebody, it often means you're in their point of view.
He focuses in on his ear
a couple times. And what's he got next to his ear? A tattoo of a hand with an eye in it.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
And the sound drops out when that happens.
Yeah. Well, okay. So something I noticed. So he's, I feel like he's the sort of personification of whatever they mean, whatever it is. Either it's like conquistadors or it's a search for treasure or it's colonialism. He is greed.
Yeah.
Because they get to the lake.
Yeah.
And he sees a little gold scale and his eyes are like, ugh, and he like immediately puts it in his mouth and he looks nuts. Like, oh my
and
God,
like
I found
hides
some gold.
It from the
He's like, he looks like a golem. Like he really treats it like, and the minute he can get his hands on her, he rips her to shreds and takes all of it. So his hearing is restored, but now of course this makes him susceptible to her screaming
call.
And she emerges like from the water like a zombie, and she's green under the gold, which is sort of like tarnished metal turns green. And she's you know, she's like holding herself like she can't believe what just happened to her. Is she alive? I don't know. She seems like she's not. Uh-huh. And she starts screaming, and she's like heartbroken screaming.
Yeah.
And now he can hear her, so he's being pulled towards her, and now he's doing the dances. But all the other guys were doing it in the beginning too. It was just so chaotic.
She calls them in. They also like are murdering each other. Yeah, as she's calling them
their
in.
Swords yeah. around and like killing each other, yeah. but very haphazardly.
Yeah.
He tries to stop some of them. Yeah. I like the beginning. When everyone's running into the water, but he doesn't know what the hell's going on. Because he looks like, whoa, what did I miss? Like, what's happening yeah. that I don't know about? And, like, trying to prevent them from running in. But he's getting attacked by them. So he's like, oh, shit, all right, I'm going to go. So he can hear. He gets dragged in. And then, of course, he succumbs and he drowns.
And we see at the bottom of the lake is just tons and tons bodies. Of bodies. And I want to start using
armor.
Gold is definitely a big part of this, but I want to also start using the word metal.
Metals,
because there's
yeah.
things that seem copperish, there's things that seem silver, and even like the lake sometimes looks like metal, or there's this jangling of like chain metal on regalia on horses.
Yeah. Oh,
even
yeah,
like the little flowers look sound. Like gold. Yeah. See, now that you've...
the sound design is incredible.
Yes. So let's talk about the aesthetics. Well, first of all, let's say it's written and directed by Alberto Melago. It is by studio. The studio is called Pinkman TV.
Hmm.
The icons are an ear, a heart that looks like a sort
real
of
heart.
A narrow. Yeah. Well, it looks like it turns. It goes from like a heart,
little like cutesy
Valentine's heart
to
like a heart,
like an anatomical heart,
right? And then an X.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a sort of realism to, in a sense that the elements look photorealistic, yet. Mm-hmm. It chooses colors and other elements based entirely on aesthetics. It's not trying to be mimetic to the real world at all. Mm. The trees are gold and the lake looks like a mirror and the flowers look like, you know, candy and gold. And, you know, the color temperature is not fixed. Like in one shot, it'll go from like looking cool and blue to like hot and red and then back again. So like everything, it's not just the camera shaking. The camera shaking, the sound is chaotic. The actual image is coming undone.
Mm. Bill said to him it looked like a silent film in the way that it's shot as well at some points. Like the edges are kind of blurry.
Yeah.
And like the light gets really kind of fuzzed out.
Mm-hmm.
Almost like it's a bad camera or like a lower quality camera. But in no way does the image look bad. It just looks intentional.
There's also a sort of fast motion-ish.
Yes. Yeah, everyone's moving real fast.
That
like a higher frame rate, I guess.
Well, we associate that with silent films because before the standard of 24 frames per second, early filmmakers would just make whatever frame rate they wanted. Mm. So like we think of that as silent, but it's really because often silent films are not correctly shown to us. Like they shouldn't look like that, but they do.
Mm.
So that's what we think of. So you've got that right. And but there's just an uncanniness, like his eyes.
It's very uncanny.
And her eyes, like, is she wearing a mask or is she not? Like, what is, but it's incredible. I don't know. It's incredible. The whole thing looks like candy.
She looks like liquid gold.
Yeah. And the jewels
shiny.
Coming
like
off of her.
Too shiny.
Yeah. Yeah. Her eyes are incredible. They're like a little dead, but like alive. And it,
almost mechanical. Like she almost looks like
an automaton.
Automaton. Yeah. Almost like Metropolis.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which again is like a siren. Like she was meant to Futura or Bad Maria, whichever version of it.
Bad Maria.
in some translations, she's Bad Maria.
That's really funny.
Because there's good Maria.
Oh.
This brings us back to one of my favorite texts of all time, which is the Bad Romance video by Lady Gaga. We can't do justice even describing it aesthetically because it's just so incredible. And at night, it looks like there's what's called a sun gun. A sun gun.
Okay. You see this a lot in nature documentaries when they're filming animals.
Yeah. And you see it a lot in
like night
the
animals.
News. Like when they're doing like an outdoor interview in the news. It's basically a sun gun is something you would never use dramatically. It's a huge, very bright light coming directly forward.
Yeah. And I called it night vision. It's not night vision, but it's just supposed to be shot at night.
Yeah.
Like he falls asleep on a tree.
Yeah.
And she climbs out of the water.
Like, she cuddles him.
Crazy crocodile. I was like, nope. While she's tears. It's incredibly creepy. And also, she's like jingling and jangling all around. But she's a little
sexy.
Oh, she's always a little sexy. She can't help but be sexy.
Yeah.
So she like slithers and crawls and like is like peeking out behind trees. She's also very manic in her presentation. So like there's one shot. She wants her
Bjork.
She's like a gold sexy Bjork.
Yeah.
So there's one shot where she's like in and out of a waterfall where she's got this crazy smile plastered on her face. And I'm like, this is so creepy.
Yeah.
But yeah, so she's like slithering all around. And the camera's like, also when she's hiding behind the trees and stuff, the camera's like in and out a lot.
Yes, yes.
And she kind of crawls up to him. Oh, the other night. Phil and I got into bed, and I started like wiggling my leg around like crazy before I put it over him. And he goes, oh, I see. Because she can't help but like move.
She can't.
In a real circular way.
Everything, it's she's like she is writhing. Water. It's like she's water.
It's like she's water, yeah.
It's all.
She's leaping and she's moving.
She also has like beads rotating all over her. Like there's a lot coming off of her, like jewels and beads. Mm-hmm. It's like it's not all gold. It's just it's all glitter. It's all shiny shit.
Yeah.
Which again is like draws you in.
Yeah.
It's a little like the crab Jermaine Clement
shiny
plays.
In Moana.
Yeah, Moana. Yeah.
Tamatoa.
Yeah. And that's what he's after too. He you know, he's drawn to the gold.
He's drawn to the gold.
But she's a little miffed that he doesn't go for her.
He doesn't. Yeah. Well, right. She checks her voice in the beginning.
Right. She's like, is it me?
Yeah. Yeah. Was it me? I'm not. So the guy who wrote that this can't be a post-colonial narrative is saying that like she's shot like she's a predator.
Oh, because that amazing shot of her like putting her eyes out
of the water like a crocodile.
Right. And therefore we
can't read that the native land or the native people are predators bad at all. She is shot like a predator, but I don't think that doesn't mean
the other point doesn't still.
Right.
I think it's a miasma of ideas.
You
don't have to pin it down.
It doesn't
in
have
any
to be
way.
Any one thing.
Clearly the director is just pulling from a lot of shit.
Yes.
And our reading of it will coincide with those ideas.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, is it a precise, perfect colonial analog? No.
No. Is it a perfect chivalric narrative?
No.
No. Is it what I think ultimately it can be is a dark fairy tale about greed.
Yeah. Generically, which is, I don't even know what it is generically, it doesn't totally fit with Love, Death, and Robots, yet spiritually it does.
Yeah. Yes. It has love and death.
It certainly does.
I mean, she looks like kind of a robot.
She certainly
She's
does.
She's like an ancient robot.
I mean, Automaton is like an early robot.
Mm-hmm. This is another one where the score is very cool.
Yeah. Oh, I remember what I want to say. When he gets his hearing, they do this incredible thing where even though we see him and he's central in the composition, we hear his voice, although it's as if it's distant, which creates this very unsettling dissonance between what we're hearing and what we're seeing. The only other thing I can think of offhand that does that is the end of Blair Witch, when we see the black and white camera but hear the sound from the camcorder, and we hear screaming, but it's the point of view of the person who's screaming.
Mm-hmm.
It's just it's unsettling. And a lot of this is unsettling.
It's very, even this is an unsettling things get violent, short. Yeah.
It's like, it's assaultive.
The sounds
of it,
are very, it's like a cacophony of sound.
Yeah.
It's noise. There's a lot of noise in this.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a beautiful Valentine.
It's amazing.
I mean, there's a heart, like you said it right. Like we see these like bird's eye view of the lake that looks a lot like a heart, especially when then it's then blood.
And it's gold, all gold.
Yeah. Why does her blood make him hear?
Like what is she?
Yeah.
She's the ultimate treasure. She's El Dorado. She's the fountain of youth. She's the city of gold. She's like everything conquistadors are looking for.
So does she want him to have that?
No, I don't think so.
Or is that because of her pain?
I think it's her blood is so valuable. It's encased in all this gold.
But why doesn't he leave? He keeps coming back. Like after he steals her shit, why does he come back and try to drink?
Well, I think he's following, because then he's journeying, right?
Yeah.
And we see that the water flows from this heart-shaped lake. So I think he's just downriver more. But he has to keep towards the water because he needs a water source to live. So he's just staying kind of close to the river so he can use it as a source. Yeah.
There's a certain madness to this.
Agreed.
Everyone's posture, everyone's way of moving, even, you know, not just her, but everybody, it all feels
frenzied.
It's like the whole thing is a wind-up toy. They're all wind-up toys inside a jewelry box. You know, it's everything. It's all these contradictions. It's nature, but it's gold and glittery. It's futuristic and past. It's light and dark. It's, you know, it's scary but also like sexy. It's completely like and I'm so glad I got to see it on the big screen, because it's absolutely gorgeous. I think it's the real standout of this season.
Absolutely.
You know, in volume one, The Witness, which was one that we didn't love narratively. But the character from that became a big cosplay.
Yeah, because visually it was stunning. It was really beautifully, and this is just beyond.
Yeah, I've been seeing Habaro like cosplay and stuff like all over Instagram and stuff. Like, it's striking a nerve, this. And it's interesting to desire to dress up like her.
Well, it's just so gorgeous. You know, from a cosplay perspective, I would see it as a huge challenge.
But, you know, it kind of reminds me of like a dream or a nightmare, in that, like, I kind of know what I'm looking at, but I don't. Like, you ever see that?
Is this an outfit? Is this her skin? What is this creature?
Where is she? And like, I was like, is she wearing a mask? Is she not? Are her eyes real? Even the way she like flips out of the water, like, it looks like something's like some machine underneath her that's like making her move.
Right, because it's deep where she is, but she can kind of float on top of it. They're all sinking.
And she like comes dancing from the middle. Yeah.
The second he touches water is when she wakes up.
Yes. When he steals that little
like scale of hers.
She's like, wow, what's going on?
Yeah, right. She wakes up, like a little creature.
What does she want?
What does she want?
I don't know.
Does she want love? She's following him.
Part of me feels like that.
Yeah. And she's forever destined, because then that means she's a cursed figure too, right? That she's not empowered.
She draws people to her, but She hurts them.
She can't. Well, that's what the director is saying. It's just about toxic relationships, because like, you're hurting yourself at the same time as like, you're hurting the thing that you love.
Yeah.
Like, I don't find her to be an empowered character who has a lot of agency, because it seems like her only ability to communicate is through these screams that will immediately destroy what she wants to communicate with.
And then she finds this one guy who is not susceptible to the screams.
Right. But he wants to.
But he wants to hurt her.
Right.
And take from her.
Mm-hmm.
And she hurts him by kissing him.
Right.
Like, they try to.
The closest I think she's been able to get, probably.
Yeah. Yeah. Isn't it interesting that, I mean, I guess she's hurting him, but he seems more interested in her jewels than
her body, like than, sexually.
Than anything sexual.
Yeah.
Like immediately is like, I want the gold. I want all of this. Yeah.
Yeah. When she's luring him through the water, it seems like she's giddy, you know?
Yeah.
Like, she's excited.
Well, it's like this little, it's like mating dance.
Mm-hmm.
It's literally like, come to this
waterfall.
Yeah,
come get me. Yeah.
It is interesting that she brings him up there.
Mm-hmm. It's not like a safe grotto.
No.
It's like a roaring waterfall.
Right. And it's so brutal. He knocks her out by headbutting
her.
Yeah,
he headbutts her.
And then,
like, after kissing her.
Yeah. And then, like, he's just pulling these things off
her. He kisses her head right before.
Yeah.
And then smashes it. Yeah. Well, I mean, he doesn't smash her head, but he bashes her head. Yeah, and I almost sort of saw that as like, he's kissing her so tenderly because that's the gold that he wants. He's kissing that gold.
Yeah.
And she's like submissive to him in that moment when she's being kissed, which makes me feel like, yeah, her motivation is... I said at the beginning of this, I'm like, she's still trying to kill him, but I don't know now.
I don't know either.
What was she trying to? Why did she take him there? We don't have to, I guess.
It's an incredible work.
Mm-hmm. You know what? You could read that roaring waterfall not as like she's trying to kill him. It's just roaring because it's like the apex of both of their desires. Like, they're about to get what they desire. She desires him. He desires her gold. And they're right there.
Right. It's
amazing.
Yeah, it really is.
We can't oversell it. You'll never know what we're talking about by just listening. You have to watch it. It's one of those things where it's like, if you only took one thing away from this episode, it's please go watch Kibato, because it's incredible.
Yeah. And I was telling you that, like, it immediately reminded me of the work of Gustav Klimt. He's an Austrian painter. He put a lot of gold in his work.
Yeah.
And it's
And the kiss.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is absolutely the kiss. Mm-hmm. Is absolutely like when they're in the waterfall. And like he would put actual gold in his work. Mm-hmm. It's really interesting.
Yeah, you sent this to me and I was like, oh, yes. Okay, I see it for sure.
But what's also interesting is like you think gold, like gold is, it's also like an element. I mean, I don't know if it's an element. I don't know science.
No, it
but
is.
It's like
it is.
It's a part of nature.
It's, what is it? It's AU or AG? No, it's AU. It's that's the elemental. Yeah. It's AU. Like AU. Also don't take my gold.
It makes me think of like.
That's how I remembered it in chemistry.
It also makes me think of like alchemy.
Yeah.
And like.
Yeah. There's all the like. I was thinking a little like the Crusades sort of.
Yeah.
When you think of like conquistadors, they're looking for the city of gold, El Dorado. They're always looking to enrich themselves. And there's also the Fountain of Youth is attached to all of that. There's
in like Arthurian legend, you've got the Holy Grail.
The Holy Grail. Gold. The alchemist is always looking for the Philosopher's Stone, which has the power to turn things into gold and give you eternal life. So I found her to be both of these things.
Interesting,
like
yeah.
She is gold and she is also a life-giving force. Like she restores his hearing. She, yeah. You know, it's so funny because she kills, but it seems like she has the power to heal.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it's amazing.
It's got layers to it. And I think we would notice something different every time we watch it.
Yeah.
It's something really, really cool. As flippant as the director seems to be about like what it means. He's like, yeah, you know, they have tattoos because I wanted them to look kind of tribal. You know, Hibato is a Spanish name. It means a lot of different Spanish things. You know, this is about a toxic relationship. I feel like that's his answer to interviews. Yeah. But he's got his own whole complicated thing going on.
Yeah. Either way, whatever, you know.
Whatever it is, I think it's a masterpiece. I really do.
Yeah, it's incredible. So, we're doing Love, Death, and Robots so far, our faves.
Mm-hmm.
And here are our categories. We've got Best Action Episode, Best...
Just started when I opened it. I'm so sorry.
Best Action Episode, Best Comedy Episode, Best Philosophical Episode, Best Creature/Monster, Sexiest Episode.
Oh, my.
Our favorite animation style, and our very favorite episode. Who wants to go first?
Okay, so we're starting with action?
Yeah, best action episode.
Okay. I want to say Kill Team Kill because it's recent and I loved it. But I'm going to go all the way back to the beginning.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say Suits.
Suits.
I love Suits.
I love Suits,
love,
too.
Love, love, love.
What do you love about Suits?
Well, it's the thing we were talking about with Mason's Rats, where it's like this sort of future past thing where there's a lot of robotic technology, but they're also just like on a homespun farm and they gotta like, you know, build their machines.
Right.
It's all very like DIY and handmade. And I love that it's kind of folksy, but they're dealing with like really crazy technology.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, they're homesteaders.
Yes.
They're defending their farm from this crazy species. And like the old lady's got a mech.
Yeah.
And all the other,
they've got like a mug with tea inside of a mech machine. Like just that juxtaposition.
Yeah. Yes.
And it has that interesting like twist ending where it's like, oh, they're the invaders.
They're the invaders. There's the, that's the native species.
Yeah.
Yeah, it has to do with like human expansion onto other worlds and trying to like terraform other planets, but it feels like it's Earth.
Yeah. It's a charming episode too.
It's very charming. I love the animation style.
Yeah.
I just love the action. I'm like rooting for all the characters. I like how the machines move. It's one of these things where it feels like the robot human connection is seamless. Like it's not a robot that I'm afraid of. Like this is a robot that's like, we need this robot to help us.
Yes, that's true. Yeah.
Yes.
It feels like a tool, like a farming tool.
A farm tool, just like a tractor.
Yeah.
You know, something like
robot
that.
Robot suit.
Right.
Yeah.
So I love that action. And then, you know, another one that I love is Sonny's Choice.
Sonny's Edge.
Sonny's Edge.
Sonny's Edge was almost
Sophie's
my
choice.
Which is, the action in that is wild.
The monster fights It's just so cool.
I know. I Sunny's Edge almost made it for me on a couple of... Sunny's Edge is only... well, it could have been everyone. I love Sunny's Edge a lot.
It was the first one I ever saw, and it hooked me.
Yeah, and it's got such a crazy aesthetic. It, like, the monster fight is amazing.
Yeah.
But yeah, no. I actually picked one that does not get a lot of play at all.
Okay.
Blind Spot.
This is one I forgot about.
Yeah, this is one people forget about. Yes. But the thing about Blind Spot is like, it's a little like... the whole thing is a chase. The whole thing is like a heist going on. It's almost like a Mad Max Fury Road. It's all action. And it's violent and it's got cursing. Yet it's got the warmness of like a Saturday morning cartoon.
Yes, I remember this way back when we were talking
like,
about
when
it.
When I watch it, I could taste the fucking Fruity Pebbles in my mouth. Like, I want action figures of these characters. Yeah. There's just something about it. I mean, it just goes, and it's so much fun. It's got that 80s Saturday morning thing, but it also feels like very cyberpunk and also like a little bit like vaporwave. It's just an incredible aesthetic.
Yeah.
And it's just a lot of fun. And yeah, people don't talk about it a lot.
No, not at all.
And it's another one from Blur Studio, although it doesn't look... Blur Studio is very... like they can do a lot
diversity.
They could do 3D and they could do 2D.
Yeah.
And this is like 2D. And this also has like a very happy ending. Like everyone dies, but then you find out that they're all backed up and you just give them new bodies.
Yeah. Because they're robots.
Yeah. They're robots.
Little robots. Okay. Yeah, I like the main kid, his eyes.
Yeah. Then you got the guy who looks like he looks a little like Geordi LaForge or like the mutant gang from Dark Knight Returns. The visor. Yeah,
big like pointy teeth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's got a cigar. It's just like fun. It's just so much fun.
Yeah, it's cool. And it's one that I never think of.
I wish... I'm a fan of Smash Saturday Morning All-Star Hits. You did not like it.
Oh, yeah.
But I wish more people played with the 80s. Like 80s is so-called like so big in pop culture. Yet I feel like nobody plays with the 80s animation style enough. I wish you saw more of that. And this isn't exactly like, it's not a pastiche of it. It just invokes that for me.
I could see that. I could see, it almost has like, I don't know why, but I'm trying to think of the cartoon it reminds me. It reminds me of an existing cartoon. Like
their camaraderie together and they're bullshitting with each other. Yeah.
I can't put my finger on it now. That's it's right. Also like 1 o'clock in the morning. I have COVID brain. Yeah. I'm bravely surviving COVID.
I'm so impressed by you.
I haven't made it to the 10-day mark yet.
All right. Let's do best comedy episode.
Okay. I am going to...
Wait. Do you think you and I will have any that are the same or not?
I actually don't think so. Oh, maybe one.
Okay.
Maybe. Okay. Another one I wanted to say, Kill Team Kill, because it made me laugh so hard.
Yeah.
But I'm going to say volume two, this is an episode I loved. I know you don't love it, is Automated Customer Service.
Did I not love it?
I don't think you loved it.
I like it.
Yeah. I thought it's just so funny.
Maybe I had problems with it, but I think very fondly of it.
And I like the ending. It seemed hopeful to me.
Also, didn't you think Mason's Rats reminded me a little bit of it? Like the pest control robot?
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that one a lot. It is funny.
I found it very funny. It's just like, it's also funny looking.
Yeah. They're like very ugly characters.
Yeah. And it's like a twisted Wally.
Yes, it is.
I found it funny. And a lot of these things are not like ha-ha funny. This one I thought was ha-ha funny. Although I will say that truthfully, the one I laughed at the hardest was Kill Team Kill still.
Is that true?
Yeah. Yeah. Just the deadpan lines were incredible. Like, this is where I come to jerk off.
And, yeah.
It's very, very funny. It's very funny.
Yeah. Yeah. Were you worried about like some recency bias of like, I can't pick volume one?
Yeah.
Volume three stuff?
Yeah. I was trying, because I have so many, I do actually have quite a few picks from volume three, like that that are non-negotiable, I think, for me.
Yeah.
So where I could, I was like, well, let me go mine the older stuff and see what I really, really like. Although I do think it gets stronger, you know, every time. I just think they hone their craft and they know what they're doing. And
I was worried that I had too much from volume one.
Okay.
Because volume one's so much longer. There's
a lot to pick
from. So much.
Yeah.
So I was like, I kind of was like,
there wasn't today too I was like rewatching
ones.
Stuff.
Like whenever I thought, could this be the one, I would rewatch it. Yeah. Like if I had two contenders, I'd rewatch both.
Both
to
of them.
Decide.
Which, yeah. No, I had a lot where I had like multiple picks and I was like, oh.
Yeah, but I actually have one where I cheated and did a tie.
Oh, okay, okay.
I'm a filthy cheater.
Well, what's like really funny in volume one? Like I say just funny.
Yeah, I don't like
it. It's like, yeah.
Well, I'll give you mine. It's okay. From volume one.
Oh.
When the yogurt took over.
Oh, that is funny.
That one I think is of all like the funny ones tend to be shorter and cuter. But there's something about this that's like, well, I like Night of the Mini Dead, right?
Yeah.
And I like Three Robots. But this is like, there's something more delicate about this. Like, it's definitely funny because it's a ridiculous idea.
Mm-hmm.
But like, it also has things to say, and it's also very like just a subtlety of it. Like when they take over the White House and then you see people like painting the walls white, they want everything white, and then like they put up a
like
photo
framed
of a Cheerio
picture. Yeah, yeah.
Because they're yogurt. Or like when they're like, we've like the first thing they say to people is like, we've solved fusion. Or we've given you an economic plan. You have to follow it totally. If you diverge at all, it will cause complete economic collapse, and then like 6 months later you see a guy like eating a baby.
Yeah.
Except for in Ohio, which is the
where
state
yogurt,
that they,
yeah, they have.
Yeah, the yogurt state. I just, and it's narrated by Maurice LaMarche.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like that sort of
has,
Orson,
like, Orson
Welles
voice. Yeah.
It's really, I think it's really, really funny. It's everything about it I like. It's just really funny. And it's, again, it's one of these things of like, we think we know everything. But what if the yogurt's smarter than us?
Could be. It's been fermenting.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a good one. That's a good choice.
But yeah, I was also thinking about like...
They don't do comedy that often.
No. I mean, one that I'd say I kind of don't like is Alternate Histories.
Yeah.
I,
Bill likes that one. He's like, oh, you didn't want to pick that? I'm like, no.
You know, maybe I'm being too much of a stickler, but the premise never made sense to me.
No, yeah.
It's just stuff happening. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't hate it. And it's cool animation. I like the sort of like weird rounded animation of it.
Yeah, that's stylistically, it's cool.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, I mean, I feel like there's more to get out of when the yoga took over.
Agreed. It's. I think that's I think it's a better one.
So the best philosophical episode.
Ooh, we might be aligned here.
Okay.
Maybe. Well, although I think I know you like the other one better.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go with The Drowned Giant.
Me too.
Okay. All right. I thought you might pick Zima Blue.
I rewatched both Zima Blue and The Drowned Giant Day because I was like,
what's it going
to
be?
Because Zima Blue really stuck out to me when I first saw it.
Mm-hmm.
But then so did The Drowned Giant. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I need to compare the two. And I realized that there's just something so much. Zima Blue is amazing for what it is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's amazing. I don't want to take anything from it. But The Drowned Giant is like such a simple premise of like, what if we discovered something that just blew open everything we thought we knew?
Mm-hmm.
Just like one little thing basically said to us, you don't know anything.
Right.
And the fact that it looks like us just makes us think, what do we know about ourselves? Which to me is like what science fiction is about in its heart, like us thinking about who we really are.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just, it's delicate. And I think it's you know, it's soft. It's
elegiac.
Yes.
Yeah. There's a real beauty and power to it.
Yeah, yeah, it's, you know, and it's, you know, it's based on a story by J.G. Ballard.
Mm-hmm.
It's directed by Tim Miller, and which is, you know, you think of like Deadpool and stuff, like you don't think of Tim Miller.
He has a real fine hand here. Where,
yeah. And it's sad. Like
it is. It's sad, but it's beautiful. It is like life in itself. It's about death as well, confronting death.
But it's also about wonder.
Yeah.
Like it begins with wonder.
All right.
And, but then also it's about like our inability to learn. Like at the end, when the giant's gone, he says, even the people that first saw it now remember it as like a sea beast. Like we couldn't, it was so out of our realm of thinking that we don't even, now that it's gone, we don't even accept it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something said about that too. Like something came that made us completely think differently about the world. And we almost couldn't accept it.
Yeah. And we took it apart and we vandalized it eventually. And
And he started off like looking young and and handsome. And
beautiful. Yeah. This like godlike creature.
Yeah. I think the narration is great. I imagine that's coming straight from the story. Mm-hmm. It's really, I don't know, it's got a beautiful quiet to it. Mm-hmm. It's elegant. Yeah. It's got a sense of awe to it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree. There's reverence for the giant itself. Yeah. And there's also just like sort of, and it's funny because it's a scientist, but he's not really asking hard questions.
He's witnessing.
He's taking it in.
Yeah. He you know, a witness is in some way a martyr. Like mm-hmm. there's something sacrificial about having to witness.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's there at the beginning when everyone else is, but he continues to come even when he doesn't want to.
Right.
Because he feels like...
He stays to record the memory, preserve it.
Yeah. Yeah. I also learned the word pizzle from it. So...
Pizzle.
Pizzle.
Okay.
As a dick.
Oh, okay.
He says the pizzle.
Oh.
But it's mislabeled as a whale. Penis. Remember at the end, it's like in a carnival.
Is it supposed to be, I know you're saying it with like a Z sound, but is it supposed to be like stamen and pistle, like a flower part?
It sounded like pizzle to me.
Pizzle, yeah.
I saw a Z, I think, in the...
I mean, pizzle, I always think of like as... If I saw it written, I would think it was pee. Like a slang for pee.
I mean, it's like a urine. Pee-pee.
It's a pee-pee.
It's a pee-pee for sure.
It's a big one.
Yeah.
That's how we end the philosophical crown. It's a pee-pee.
It's about pee-pee, really.
It's about a big pee-pee.
Yeah, it's just like what I love about sci-fi. It's just like, you know, I love robots and I love space and I love something like, you know, Blind Spot, where it's just like, he has robots and bullshit and blah, blah. Yeah. But then just something like this where it's like very natural. I mean, it's all on the beach. Yeah. It's all very natural. It's just water. I also love the image of like the girl like hanging out with his ear.
Yeah. I love the thing I always think of is the little pond that forms.
Yeah.
And there's like a little fish in it.
Yeah.
In his hand.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah. So what else? So you were thinking about Zima Blue.
Zima Blue. So, but it's two different things, right? It's two different like thought exercises. One is sort of like
what's about like the meaning of expression.
It's almost like a what I've recently learned. So Bill is taking like a pedagogy training mm-hmm. right now, and he was like, oh, let me talk to you about Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And I was like, great, tell me all about it.
Yes.
It's like that, whereas like the apex of the human experience, I would guess I would say, although he's not human, is transcendence, and it comes after self-actualization.
Yeah.
And it seems like that's what he's trying to achieve, right? Like he's self-actualizing to the point of transcendence. Like he can transcend this experience of life.
Yeah. And I love in it that question of like, he started as a person. So how is the machine the thing? Like it seems like it's about a machine evolving, yet he started as a person. So was it the parts that are part of him that evolve?
Right. Do the parts come from that machine? Yeah. And then it's like the sense memory of that, those parts wanting to go back to do that simple thing.
So Zima Blue, mm-hmm. The drowned giant, and the very essence of the machine are the sort of obvious philosophical ones. Mm-hmm. But I flirted with the idea of putting Pop Squad. It's an action one and it's more like a narrative one. Yet,
but it is
very philosophical. Yeah. Like it's a thoughtful one for sure. But no, I've got to go with the drowned giant. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
What? Yeah. Okay. So best creature monster.
Okay. I have a couple. Gus is cheating. So
I have two as well.
All right. So one I want to say immediately is the Thanapod. Ooh. It's horrific and terrible, and I hate it, but it's great. It's a nightmare beast.
Yes. It's got a very like vagina dentata mouth.
Yes.
Too.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's just like clickety clacking all over the place, and just like a lot of teeth, and it gobbles them people up, and it's gory, and it just it is a crab, right? Which you wouldn't. I mean, I don't want to get like pinched by one, but it's not exactly the scariest thing on the planet.
But when you make it fucking huge,
like so we go to my mom. My mom has a house that's on the water in New Jersey. It's like on a canal.
Oh yeah, I've been there.
Okay, so that's right. And they have crab trap that they drop in the water. And then we pull up and Henry's like so excited to see the crabs. And they're quick. Like, they scuttle and scurry, yeah, and they're fast.
They're roaches. They're all bugs.
They're all related. They're sea bugs, right?
It's so weird that people...
Well, I don't eat them, but, you know.
It's weird. Yeah. I don't know. It's weird to me that people like ill bugs, but yeah, if it's a water bug, sure, and you,
yeah,
pull,
no,
a...
Yeah, no, I get it.
You pull a lemon on that. It's a
water bug. So, but they're quick and, like, creepy.
Yeah.
And just
silly
to make
sidewalkers.
That, silly, yeah. To make them huge...
Yeah.
It's so scary to me. I'm like, oh no, I don't like that at all.
What about that moment when it's got the babies and to help them eat, it's like smashing bodies.
Like it's mama birding.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just completely pulverizing the bodies like a meat tenderizer. So that was an unpleasant creature monster. But another, I also really like the werewolf.
Oh, okay.
I like how they rip off their own skin to become the werewolf. Yeah. I always thought that was kind of fun. I just like that short, but this was the cheat though. This is my other one that I love. I love the frost whales in ice.
Why is that a cheat?
Well, because I'm just picking so many.
Because you're picking three?
I'm picking a bunch. But yeah, that's not like a true pick. My true picks are the Thanapod and the frost whales.
Oh, I see.
So the frost whales being like these massive, massive like ice.
Yeah, they're beautiful.
Whales, and then they have like lightning in them.
Bioluminescence. Yeah. Is beautiful, and it digital animation does it so well.
Yes. Yeah. Anytime something glows in animation, it looks really pretty. So I love the frost whales, and I hate the Thanapod, but they're both great creatures.
So I also...
Sea creatures both, actually.
I know. So I also have two.
Okay.
I'm calling this a tie, but it's none of the three that you said.
All right.
My first would be the siren from Hibaro.
Okay.
Because it is monstrous. Mm-hmm. It is a creature. Mm-hmm. But it is, you know, it's beautiful. We talked about it at length.
That's so funny. In my head, I wouldn't categorize her as like a creature. I'm like, oh, she's a person. But she's not.
She's monstrous.
She's monstrous. She's a creature. Yeah.
And the other one is Santa Claus from...
Oh, my God.
From, All Through the House.
Yeah.
Just the design of it with where it has a mouth that's covered by hands and then the hands open so the mouth can regurgitate something out of it.
Yeah.
Just the whole, and it's a red. It's just.
Yeah.
It's Santa.
It's awful.
You know, when I saw that, they played it in the theater. When the kid says the line, when the kid has the train, man. And he says, it's just what I wanted. Everyone like lost their shit. It's such a good.
It's a great one.
It's really wholesome when you think about it.
It is.
And then it ends with them being like, what if we weren't nice?
Amazing.
Stay nice.
Stay nice.
Yeah.
Santa's the most horrible thing you've ever seen in your life. But I love it in silhouette. It looks like Santa as we would know him as a human being. But no, it's this.
And it eats the cookies and milk. It uses its weird long tongue to drink the milk.
And and like gags up all the presents. Right.
And it smells you. That's how it knows if you're good or bad.
Oh.
It smells you.
Yeah.
So weird. Which means what? It smells you while you're asleep? How does it know? It
smells you while you're sleeping.
Oh my God.
It smells when you're awake.
It's interesting because it...
It does not have COVID.
you think about... Yeah, I know. You think about like Silent Night, Deadly Night. Like there's something, I guess, obvious about taking something as wholesome as Santa and turning it on its head. Mm-hmm. But it's also like there is an inherent creepiness to Santa because he is a home invader.
He's a home invader. He knows everything you do.
Yeah. I mean, he's... omnipotent.
Mm-hmm. And other countries' versions of Santa are very creepy. And I'm not even talking about Krampus. I'm talking about like Dutch Santa.
What's he do?
Oh, Dutch Santa. Well, he arrives on a boat. And if you're bad, he sticks you in a bag and he brings you to Spain.
Sure.
Why? One year for the World Cup, it was the Netherlands versus Spain. And we were like, oh my God, it's the bad Christmas kids and the good Christmas kids. Because the good kids get to stay in the Netherlands and the bad kids are shipped off right to Spain where they belong. So Dutch Santa also has Schwarte Peter.
Oh, is that the blackface one?
Yeah, that's a crazy blackface.
Yeah, I read a book about Santa. Which David Sedaris
has a whole thing about Schwarte Peter, which is
that's upsetting.
He's like, this is the craziest shit I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, that's way upsetting.
He arrives on a boat.
Yeah,
with his blackface friend.
Yeah,
no good.
Santa don't need a friend.
No good. You certainly don't need that kind of friend.
No, Santa.
No, because it's not supposed to be I don't even want to get into it, but it's very bad blackface. Is there any good blackface? No, there isn't.
No, I'm gonna say no categorically.
Categorically, no.
sexiest episode. Now, you said to me that you had a hard time with this. Why?
Earlier today, I was like, I don't really have a response for this sexiest episode because all the sex in Love, Death, and Robots is paired with something awful.
I don't know if I totally agree.
Okay, so the ones I'm going to tell you the ones that came to mind when you say something sexy.
Well,
right?
I would say that I think I may have mislabeled this because really what you're thinking about is what I was thinking about is the sexiest scene in any of them. I don't know.
Okay.
I wouldn't call any episode entirely sexy.
No.
Like the way I would say the best comedy or something.
So in my head, I have like a few where I'm like, okay, there's a sex scene here. Yeah. And but then I'm like, but then there's something terrible that happens.
Sure.
So like they're in Sonny's edge. Mm-hmm. She starts hooking up with a woman and then gets stabbed.
Yeah.
Then in The Witness, the woman is murdered. And
there's
like,
also like an S&M club in that.
That part is cool.
Yeah.
So I would say that's a sexy part of it. I would say that the whole club scene is cool. Yeah. I mean, Akilah Rift has an insane sex scene.
But that's beautiful. Because the like monster just wants love and companionship.
I mean, we discussed this way back when, but we're like, is he fucking that monster?
Yes.
He's actually fucking that monster.
Yes.
Or he's just like in a dream state. Or she's getting something out of it.
She's getting a lot out of it.
Yeah.
That's love.
I mean, I would say this is going to be your pick.
I rewatched it today and I forgot that it ends with him waking up again. So she's going to keep trying.
She's just going to keep. Well, she's just going to keep doing it until he dies.
She's so alone.
A beautiful dream before dying, right? Yes. Like he's doomed.
Yes.
He is doomed.
That's my pick?
I think that's your pick. And then wrong. Then there's Swarm.
No, that's not it.
Surrounded by bugs. Horrible.
You know, we've talked about this before. It got less sexy.
What?
The series, like season one has way more explicit sex scenes.
I'm thinking, what else has sex that I wrote something?
Snow in the Desert has a sex scene.
That one at least is like nice. There was Minnie Dead.
Oh yeah, that's a hot one.
All right, what's your choice?
So you had no answer?
I don't
you
have
can't
a
think
pick.
Of an answer?
I mean, I would say, okay, Akilah Rift.
Okay. I'm going to say Sonny's Edge.
Okay.
Because I find
the scene is sexy.
Game, yes.
Yeah. It is a sexy scene, but then it's immediately horrible.
And Sonny's like a punk with short hair and like tattered clothes. Mm. And the other character whose name is Jennifer is like, has like a little bow, like pink thing in her hair, a little pink flower in her hair and like this little princess dress, but she's like an evil piece of shit. Mm. She's got like a choker on, like the way that they're sort of seducing one another. I think it's very sexy. Yes, it does end with Jennifer like fucking Wolverine-ing Sonny right through the head, and then she goes crazy and like smashes her head.
Yeah,
but then Sonny lives because she wasn't even really in there.
She wasn't really in there.
So yeah, that's the sexiest scene.
I just can't get around her getting like horribly killed.
Before that, you gotta go before that.
Yeah, there's a lot of sex, but I don't know that any of it is particularly sexy for me. I'm like, oh no.
Come on, when Sonny's behind her and she like unzips her dress and starts kissing her neck. It's pretty hot.
I mean, in the moment, I'm like, oh, this is nice. And then the first time I watched it,
they're both so lithe and like,
oh, well, yeah.
You know, the way the art style, like, you know, it's hot. Anyway, the more I speak, the more I reveal about myself. So I should stop.
I'm trying to think if there's anything else. There's a lot of like,
there's not a lot for a show called Love, Death, and Robots. There's not a lot of.
I was like, is there anything in Pop Squad? No.
No.
Oh, she says she wants that.
She tries
sex.
To fuck him in the car and he's like, no,
I just killed a baby. Yeah. Sorry, I can't do it. It's all awful.
Right. And that's that whole
story
is about like interrupted coitus. You know what I mean? It's like.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man. Well. I mean, there's a lot of dick shots. I mean, not that it's sexy, but it's just like
there's
you said it's like
dicks.
Equal opportunity.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's a lot of dicks, actually. There's a lot of dicks in
season one. We get a lot of dicks.
But I'm thinking season three, you've got like the dick in the beginning of Kill Team Kill. Mm-hmm. Then you've got a bunch of dicks in Three Robots, just guys with their dicks out.
Yeah.
Flaccid dicks, that's really brave.
Yeah.
So favorite animation style?
In the Tall Grasses is my favorite.
Which is
it's like almost like the impressionist.
Yeah, it's got
style.
It's got an impression. Yeah, it's got
also a great creature. in that one.
Yeah,
very cool creature.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I couldn't get enough of it. And even though the story was kind of sparse,
right,
there really wasn't much to it. I found the art style to be absolutely gripping and beautiful. But I mean, I'm willfully ignoring Hibaro for this section because it's
right.
I have, you know.
Well, you know, when I was thinking of this, I was thinking about the one that's most pleasing to me.
Mm-hmm,
you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Not so much the one that I think is the best, because I agree. Yeah. Hibaro could be the best of everything.
Everything, yeah.
It's even sexiest, it's incredible.
Really. I mean, when they're together in the waterfall, in that moment before it all goes wrong, it is sexy.
Right. But yeah, you the impressionistic style of In the Tall Grass is like very... You know, that's the thing about animation that I love, which is like it's such pure cinema. It's like every element is crafted. And if you like it, it's just like absolute candy. Well, you know, I was thinking
The
I'm
Witness.
Sorry.
We were saying that about The Witness when we were doing Volume 1. We were like, yeah, we didn't love the story, but like the animation is gorgeous. Yeah.
I was recently watching He-Man and the Master of the Universe, the new one for Netflix. And it's so incredibly gorgeous as a show. And I was thinking, you know, people think of like cartoon, like people are like, oh, you watch cartoons for children. They're so simple. But I think, yes, narratively they are. But aesthetically, they're so much more complex. Mm. Like fucking SpongeBob is much more aesthetically complex than, you know, an episode of Barry. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
Like, not that I'm putting those down, but it's like, if you're an aesthetician, if you love colors, and if you love like art like that, you know, it's incredible. Which brings me to my answer, which is The Very Pulse of the Machine is my favorite art style.
Okay.
And it's sticking out.
It kind of reminds me of the Paper Girls graphic novels.
Yes, for sure. Those
big colors.
It's very illustrative. It's very comic book. And those, the blue and the yellow and the just, it's just absolutely, and just like the clarity of it, the inky lines. And I just think it's absolutely incredibly gorgeous. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a beautiful style.
So very favorite episode.
Hibaro. It's my all time.
Interesting.
I love a lot of it, but I'm just like, this is incredible.
When Volume 4 comes out, I'm interested if the bloom comes off the rose a little bit.
I mean, it is their jewel right now, right? Like it's in the material for all their advertising for this volume. And I think with good reason. I mean, I think it's narratively very interesting. I think it opens up a lot of possibilities. Right. It's not just that it's so visually arresting that I've never seen anything like it before. So it's got the aesthetic down, right? Like it's doing this thing. It's doing this incredible thing, with the animation. It's doing this crazy thing with the camera work. It's telling a very cool, interesting story, even though it's not narratively confusing. It's just like, it's, yeah, unusual storytelling, but it's still it poses a lot of questions, but questions that I don't find frustrating. Like I find Swarm to be frustrating in that way with its questions, this, it's like I have questions, but I'm fascinated by this. Like I love that it's open to interpretation. I love the story that it's telling, whatever that story may be. You know, it's a straightforward story, but there's a lot going on there.
I could. I hope it blows open the doors for them doing different things.
Different things, yeah. They just keep pushing themselves. And I really think this is the apex of their creation so far. I really do. I love it.
I want to add an honorable mention for best art style.
Sure.
Because I didn't. This is what I don't think about, but I'm looking at it now. Mm-hmm. Good Hunting has incredible art style. Very like anime, but like you've got that like steampunk Victorian world. And
Good Hunting was a favorite of mine in Volume 1. And I feel like it's sort of been overlooked because there's so much good stuff happening.
Volume 1's almost too long. Yeah. Like you need a smaller amount to really enjoy what's there.
Yeah. It was one of my favorites though, I would say. It was like maybe in the top three when we first did Volume 1. That is very strong.
Yeah. My favorite episode of all time.
I feel like I know what it is.
What is it?
Is it Pop Squad?
No.
Oh.
When we first talked about it, I was really defending Pop Squad to you, and you were like, you had a lot of problems with it.
I did, and but I still I like it a lot. I couldn't shake it. It was the I really couldn't stop thinking about it. It is. I think it's strong. Yeah. I hated this world that we were living in.
Yeah. No, I do love it, but no, it's beyond the Killer Rift.
Yeah.
That's just. It's beautiful.
That was the one
it's
we compared scary. It most it's, to.
Yeah. Yeah.
We kept coming back to Akila Rift. Akila Rift is...
It's like a Twilight Zone episode. It has an ending like a Twilight Zone episode.
It's a great story. It's horrifying. It's...
Heartbreaking. It's sad.
Yeah.
It's sci-fi-ish. It's like the whole thing about...
It's
not
going the direction you think it's going to go in.
It's sexy. It's got it's everything. So sexy. It's got everything that, you know, it needs.
That at least is a sex scene where no one gets murdered in it. So.
Right. But you do have to then imagine that he's fucking a giant spider. Like a basically like an emaciated corpse fucking a giant spider monster.
Yep.
Or maybe she's like blowing him in some weird way.
I just felt like when the reveal happens,
it's
right?
It's so upsetting.
It really is. I just sort of felt like I don't think physically, maybe I need to
you want
think
me to draw you a picture?
Physically that they're not together, but like psychically she's getting something out of it because clearly she has psychic power. Like she's creating this hallucination.
I don't know if she's like coming from it, but I think him enjoying it, she's enjoying that intimacy because that's what she wants.
He wants is to not. To, she loves all her.
She's
lost
so
souls.
Alone.
Yeah,
like he's they're lost there, but so is she. She's like she's in a corner of the universe where she's
in this
all
weird
alone.
Little pocket all by herself.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. It's heartbreaking.
yeah,
yeah. I'm trying to think. I know we didn't say this, but I'm trying to think if I have a least favorite. You know what? As I say, I love this show, but my least favorite is probably Life Hutch.
Really?
It's really kind of like, eh. And it's based on a story by Harlan Ellison, who I like, but it's kind of...
Life Hutch is in that, I mean, sort of, I would put it actually in the same category as Pulse of the Machine, even though that's a philosophical one. It's like that. It's like Helping Hand. It's like these survival ones.
Yeah.
Where it's like this one person against the odds. Sort of like the movie The Martian. Or like it's just like the space narrative of like I have to survive.
I don't know. It doesn't hit me that way. It doesn't throw me. I mean, what's the one you like the least?
I mean, probably like something throwaway, like alternate histories or like the dump or something or just something.
Something you don't watch again.
Yeah. Like, so who cares? Like, although, I mean, the dump has got this incredible animation style. That's crazy. And alternate history. I you know what? I'm going to say alternate histories is my least favorite because I couldn't care less.
Yeah. There's ones that I rewatch, and then there's ones that I never rewatch.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Even like Fish Night, because for its style, like I like the style very much.
Yeah. I don't like it as much as you, but Fish Night, I mean, when you get into it, like when you get to the end, it's very good.
Mm-hmm.
I hope this show keeps going. You know, it's like, it's not, it's at that Netflix crossroads. Like you, like a Netflix show can go on two or three seasons without making a wave and then they'll just cancel it.
Mm.
Like it's at that crossroads where it's like, I'd be disappointed, but I wouldn't be surprised if like tomorrow we read like Netflix is done with
Love the Robots. Yeah.
But I would love for them to just keep going forever.
I feel like this season's going to win a lot of Emmys though. Like Creative Arts Emmys.
And they have won Emmys before.
They have.
So I just want to go. But I feel like Netflix is growing away from caring about those things. They just want fucking
subscribers. They want numbers.
Now.
Yeah.
They said like recently he was like, we're never going to do something like The Irishman again. It's too long. Like we don't care. Basically he said like we don't give a shit about art anymore.
It's too long. It's too much money. Which is funny because now Netflix sort of became the place to go to make art because the bigger studios for the movie theaters were not doing it.
Right.
And I was like, well, we need money. Netflix is doing very bad quarterly.
Right. I do hope it goes on forever. I absolutely love it. You know, and I like everything about it. I like that it takes some time. I like that you look forward to it. I like that it's just like these different things to chew on. So, yeah, that's incredible. This has been PCMC.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening to this two-part episode.
That's right.
That started a week ago.
I have COVID again.
Yeah. I've got COVID 29.
Oh, my goodness. This is from the future.
Yeah, you bet it is. So this is PCMC. I'm Mike Buongiorno. I was joined today by Janine Gagliardi.
Hello, and thank you for having me.
And if you're new to the show, thank you so much for listening. I know you're here for the Love, Death, and Robot content, but take a look at the feed. I'm sure there's a lot of other things you find interesting. Sure. We end every episode by saying...
Go bye-bye.